Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. It's easy to take our fresh water for granted. Unlike many parts of the world, we can simply turn on the tap and safely drink the water. Have you ever given thought to where that water comes from? If you live on the Cape or Islands, it comes from our aquifer, a series of freshwater pools or lenses beneath the ground. Keeping that aquifer free of contaminants and safe to drink is up to all of us, and in doing so, we'll also be protecting the environment above the ground. Joining us to discuss how we can protect our drinking water is Calliope Shute. She's Hazardous Materials Environmental Specialist with the Barnstable County Hazardous Materials Program. Good morning.
Good morning.
Brian Baumgartel, who's a Senior Environmental Specialist with Barnstable County Department of Health and Environment. Good morning to you, Brian.
Good morning.
And both of you are members of Groundwater Guardians, and we'll find out what that is in a minute. Rick Carney is a shellfish biologist and Director Emeritus at the Martha's Vineyard Shellfish Group. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Emma Green Beach is Co-Director and Shellfish Biologist at the Martha's Vineyard Shellfish Group. Good morning.
Good morning, Mindy.
All right, so what are Groundwater Guardians?
Groundwater Guardians are teams that are located around the country that raise awareness about where drinking water comes from and how to protect it. Barnstable County has been a member of the Groundwater Guardians, which comes from the Groundwater Foundation, a national organization, since 1995, sometimes through the Cape Cod Commission, right now through the Cape Cod Cooperative Extension, which is where I operate out of, and the Barnstable County Department of Health and Environment, where Brian comes from. Mm-hmm.
Em and Rick, you are with the Martha's Vineyard Shellfish Group, which is a nonprofit to preserve and expand shellfishing on the vineyard. Explain the connection between the shellfishery and drinking water.
Well, shellfishery, especially with regard to surface water, obviously, the beds are closed or open on the basis of how good the water is. Drinking water just kind of comes, it's in the same ballpark.
It's all connected, yeah.
It's all connected. And yeah, so it's, you have to address it all.
Yeah. You were on the team that put together the first Island Blue Pages. So tell us more about this document and the impetus behind creating it.
Well, it was a long story, and I'll try to make it short. But I for many years, I had kind of collected these kind of public outreach documents, basically to educate people about their actions and how they impact the environment. And at some point, I said, well, we've got to do one here on the vineyard. And that's kind of how it started. Mm-hmm. And I had a bunch of them to look at. And basically, I liked this idea of like a comic book, reader-friendly.
Reader-friendly is good, yeah.
And we got together. There's a group on the island called the Water Alliance. And we decided to do it. We had a committee. And everybody kind of took a chapter, and we based this on the Puget Sound book because we wanted to keep the cost down, and we liked the original artwork. Mm-hmm. When we wanted to use that, and with permission, we were able to do it. So it took a long time to get funding. We finally got the funding actually through the Wampanoag Tribe, through EPA. And the first edition, first printing, I think we did about 1,700 copies that we included in every newspaper. So everybody on the vineyard got one.
Yeah. Let's start with some of the basics. Maybe Brian wants to address this. What is an aquifer? And are there aquifers that supply the water in the Cape and Islands unusual in any way?
So they're defined as sole source aquifers. So it's pretty much the only place where our water comes from. There are a few exceptions, and really even in Falmouth where they're using surface water, that water is coming from the aquifer in some way, shape, or form. So they're kind of neatly confined bodies of water underneath our feet that we don't really think about a whole lot every day.
And sole, meaning one.
Meaning one,
What
yes.
about the vineyard?
The vineyard also has a sole source aquifer. It's a little complicated. There's the down island towns really draw all of their drinking water from a sole source. And the up island towns, there may be some more pocket aquifers mm-hmm. that are a little bit separated, but still probably connected all in some way.
So how are the aquifers replenished?
The aquifers are recharged mainly by rainwater. Mm-hmm. So in a perfect scenario, someone could correct this, but I think that nearly 90% of rainwater eventually makes it down into the aquifer. The more impervious surfaces we have, the more roofs and pavement, the less that it goes into the ground and more that ends up into our ponds and mm-hmm. on the way to the water.
So if we have, say, a prolonged drought, maybe over a course of several years, is it possible the aquifer could become depleted? Is that possible?
It would certainly go down quite a bit. It's pretty abundant. And I would just add that one of the cool things, which is also makes the Cape Cod aquifer more fragile, is that it's largely unconfined because we live on a sandbar. Mm-hmm. So any of these above ground activities that we engage in, like Emma was saying, with the impervious surfaces, that can really impact what happens below ground to our drinking water. But in a drought situation, even though that groundwater is abundant, it can get depleted and become, you know, conservation is important. Water conservation is definitely something that we all here sitting at this table think about.
Yeah. And you mentioned we live on a sandbar, and that has implications too, right? I mean, the things move through the sand more quickly than they would other types of.
Absolutely.
Right. So tell us about that.
Well, if it has time to go through the sand, though, it does filter. Mm-hmm. And it is clean. I think our biggest problem is, as Emma mentioned, the impervious surfaces. More impervious surfaces we have, it basically shunts the water that would normally be percolating through the soils and the sand. And instead of being cleaned, it just goes untreated right into our waterways.
Okay. But in some places where there is more clay involved underneath our feet, I think that the water is slowed down and may have even more time to be filtered and cleaned. Before it reaches.
Yeah, that's been sort of one of the unfortunate things about the Cape and septic systems is we have all this great sand and it's very convenient for getting rid of our wastewater. So we've had a habit of digging a deep hole to get to the cleanest sand that we can that percolates the quickest to get rid of our wastewater. And unfortunately, that leads to not really treating the nutrients in our wastewater and is what's really led to the nitrogen problem mm-hmm. that we have around here and phosphorus as well.
Yeah, we've been talking about that for quite a few years now. And for a while, you know, people say, well, I have Title V, I'm okay. And a lot of people didn't realize that Title V doesn't stop the nitrogen, right? So we've had an issue with that.
Right.
So where are we at now as far as public awareness when it deals with wastewater?
I think we've come a long way sort of in the last decade from when I really started working on this stuff. I think a lot of people are definitely more aware of the issue. And I think, you know, sort of the blaring cost of cleaning it all up is really what's brought it to people's attention more so than really the environmental problem that we've created. But we're making progress. Yeah.
With a changing climate, we're seeing more coastal flooding and storm surges. How does that impact the aquifer? And is there a saltwater intrusion into the aquifer? Is that a problem?
Well, luckily, the governor of this Commonwealth has made climate change a priority for his administration and put together the municipal vulnerability preparedness plans for the towns. And a lot of Cape towns are really digging into that and looking at how they can make a difference and become more resilient to the effects of climate change. It wasn't really on our radar at this like really super local level on how we could make a difference, but the Baker administration kind of changed that around a couple of years ago by introducing the municipal vulnerability preparedness plans or program rather for the state. And luckily, the Cape Cape Cod has Shannon Gerbo, who works for Barnesville County, who's really assisting the towns with this climate change resiliency preparedness. It's pretty exciting, actually.
Mm-hmm. But is there an impact from coastal flooding? I mean. Yeah.
Yes. Especially wells, especially private wells that are in lower lying areas. You know, we could all start to probably name some specific neighborhoods and whatnot where the saltwater intrusion will become an issue. And in some places, even on the vineyard, there are some neighborhoods where people's wells do have more sodium in them than they should, and that's increasing, and that has all kinds of human health implications. It's kind of scary.
Yeah. We see
even
that
more scary is septic systems going underwater.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you do lose actually some nitrogen removal performance when you get saltwater intrusion coming in underneath. Mm. So another thing to consider.
So we have been seeing some saltwater intrusion then, right? A little bit.
It happens. I mean, as the sea level rises, obviously we'll see more of it. But you know, it's. The fresh water sort of pushes down as we get, you know, rain. The head pressure from the incoming water sort of pushes down and, you know, kind of keep some of the salt water at bay, but there are, you know, places where it comes in a little bit more or less. And, you know, as the sea level rises, obviously we'll have more of those issues looking down the road.
Yeah. And as you're saying, Calliope, but we are trying to put plans into place as that happens.
About half the Cape towns have really taken a hard look at the MVP program and how they can implement programs with some grants from the Commonwealth to make a difference. I would just say as an aside that some of the intense pumping, the draw on the aquifer, you know, kind of changes that saltwater intrusion dynamic, and especially in some of our coastal communities like Truro, mm-hmm. where with a big storm event and a heavy draw on the aquifer, it can make a difference.
We are talking about protecting our drinking water. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about how to protect our drinking water. With us is Calliope Shoot, Hazardous Materials Environmental Specialist with the Barnstable County Hazardous Materials Program, Brian Baumgartner, Senior Environmental Specialist with Barnstable County Department of Health and Environment, Rick Carney, Shellfish Biologist and Director Emeritus at the Martha's Vineyard Shellfish Group, and Emma Green Beach, Co-Director and Shellfish Biologist, also with the Martha's Vineyard Shellfish Group. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to join the conversation. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. All right, so we have this series of watersheds in our region, and we tend to think of watersheds as pathways to rivers, pools, and eventually the ocean. So what determines whether water percolates through the ground and reaches the aquifer versus finding its way to the ocean? Anybody know?
Well, I think for the most part, you know, it's going to go down through our, we have, like I said earlier, we have very nice sandy soils, and for the most part, it's going to percolate down through that pretty quickly. I don't think, I mean, at least in my experience, runoff isn't a huge issue. Runoff to the ocean here mm-hmm. anyway isn't a major issue. I mean, we do have a minimal number of creeks and streams here that do carry some runoff water, but most of it's going down through into the aquifer.
Yeah, I think overland flow is not really happening unless you're at, like, Joint Base Cape Cod with a big runway or mm-hmm. maybe an airport on, you know, municipal airport around the Cape.
Okay. So, do you think most people think about, you know, I think we think about something, you know, you're pouring something on the ground, but, you know, what we're flushing down our toilets and our sinks, the chemical, you know, what we're using, the chemicals in our home. Talk a little bit about how that impacts water quality.
I think people are thinking more about it these days. The awareness is being raised through social media and traditional media, radio. People are realizing that what they put in their bodies and on their bodies and flush down the drain in the toilet can end up in their drinking water. And that is something that they're being more mindful of. I deal with many thousands of residents of Cape Cod every year face-to-face at my hazardous waste collections, and people are always very grateful at the services that are being offered to kind of mitigate that chemical load, mm-hmm. Whether it's a pesticide or a pool chemical or something like that.
It's so very important, I believe, to educate people, because I think that most people, if they know what they're doing is going to be damaging to the environment, they won't do it. Mm-hmm. And in many cases, they just aren't aware. And that was the idea behind the Blue Pages, basically, yeah. to kind of get the information out so people, good people, are if they're knowledgeable, they'll make an effort.
Yeah. This is a lot of information in this Blue Pages book. And as you mentioned, everybody on the Vineyard got one. Is it available beyond the Vineyard? I mean, could people on the Cape and Nantucket also?
It is online.
It is online. Mm-hmm.
You can, all the member organizations, all the pond groups, and so many of the nonprofits on the Vineyard have links to the Blue Pages on our websites. We have updated them recently with the changes in this newest edition. And all the questions can go through the MV Commission. And so it's also on their website.
If we didn't have people producing pollution and contaminants, would the water aquifer be fit for human consumption? I'm asking you to speculate a lot here. Or would it need to be treated first?
Well, most of us are already drinking it relatively untreated. Anybody who has a private well, unless you have a filtration system of some sort on your well, you're drinking water straight out of the aquifer. Mm-hmm. A lot of our water districts do really minimal treatment because they haven't had to, really. You know, on occasion, they'll have to address an issue with maybe bacterial contamination or something like that. That's happened on occasion with the surface supply in Falmouth. But for the most part, yeah, it's very drinkable water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about those filtration systems? What does it filter out everything, or are there certain chemicals that it does not?
I was going to say, on the vineyard, roughly half of the homes are serviced by private wells. And I believe that most of the treatment that's done is either to correct for acidity, because a lot of our water can be acidic, which can put little tiny pinholes into our copper piping, cause all kinds of problems. So they're treated for acidity, and sometimes to remove a little bit of salt mm-hmm. that might be there.
Yeah, some people put carbon filtration on. Usually that's pretty effective for removing a lot of the more concerning chemicals that might be in water.
Mm-hmm. And private wells are definitely encouraged to be tested regularly for contaminants and for nitrogen species that can mm-hmm. contaminate the drinking water.
We were talking a few minutes ago about, climate change and, more storm surge and, rising sea level. And Calliope, you live in Provincetown, and I was mentioning I had seen some video in one of the storms where there was actually, fish swimming in somebody's basement. And, you can see the water pouring out of the sides of somebody's basement door. And one of you brought up a really interesting point, was that a lot of people keep a lot of chemicals in their basements, and that could be an issue for us going forward as we see more of this type of weather.
Yeah, people really need to be mindful of how they, what they use. I think, coming up with a less toxic alternative to household chemicals is a great place to start. But if you do want to use pesticides or pool chemicals or boat gasoline or whatever it is that you're using and storing in your basement or your shed or outbuilding, et cetera, that you really think about how you store it, mm-hmm. especially if there's, a fire or a flood or some other emergency. Mm-hmm. Those first responders going in may not know what you have in your house that's being stored. And certainly floodwaters don't mm-hmm. discern when they're flooding out your basement or your garage, et cetera, what you're storing. So keeping things above, waist high on shelving in totes, like plastic toters mm-hmm. with a lid or some other container that's really protecting those chemicals. I think people don't always know how hazardous those chemicals are.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe labeling them, would that be helpful for first responders, knowing what you've got there? All right. John is giving us a call from Orleans. Oh, John is gone. Okay. 866-999-4626 is our number. If you would like to join the conversation, that's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So what laws do we have in Massachusetts governing the disposal of waste that could pose a threat to groundwater?
Well, for hazardous waste, that comes from EPA through the DEP and then down to the local officials. Throwing stuff that's too toxic to trash away really can impact solid waste workers, who are probably the most vulnerable municipal employees when it comes to that kind of trash. And improperly disposing it can, definitely hurt your well water, your drinking water, mm-hmm. Whether you use your well for irrigation or for, in indoor use, absolutely it can impact it. As far as laws, I don't know how much your listeners really want to know about like CMRs and Massachusetts, but I think it's suffice to say that stuff that's too toxic to trash shouldn't be thrown away. It should be brought to a hazardous waste collection. They have them on the vineyard, Emma was saying, and I saw it in the Blue Pages, which is a really fabulous publication. I want to put a link on my Love Your Local Water page. Mm-hmm. And they have them on the vineyard. They have them on Nantucket. They have them on the Cape. They're free to residents on the Cape. And so there's really no excuse to throw stuff mm-hmm. away that shouldn't be thrown away.
And I would also add, don't flush it. Yeah. Don't dump it down the sink, and don't go in the backyard and dump it out there either.
I was saying, and same thing with sometimes people dump their prescriptions in the toilet. Better to drop them off. And most of the police stations and they have those, you can bring, unused prescriptions there. That's a better place to bring them.
Absolutely.
Emily, you want to say something?
Brian just mentioned putting down the toilet, and that just reminded me of something else that, as Rick was speaking earlier, we have to remember that so many of us have septic systems. And as you said earlier, that our Title V septic systems were designed to keep us safe from bacteria. They're for sanitation. They weren't to remove nitrogen. They aren't to keep these other, our medications and all these other contaminants out of all of our water sources. So it's something that we really have to remember. And that, I think that's one of the things that people are the most surprised about as we go through our community and trying to have these conversations. And they go, oh, but well, I have a new septic system, mm-hmm. or oh, this house got put in right on the water, but it's brand new. I'm like, but this is the catch with the Title Fives. And so within the Water Alliance, we have a lot of these discussions and all the different ways that maybe Title Five could be amended, or all the new technologies that are coming out. So that is just, I think that's just a really important piece of information for everyone to remember.
Right, right. And I would add, not to just vilify septic systems themselves. I mean, I'm one of my other hats is I'm the director of the Massachusetts Alternative Septic System Test Center. So I do, you know, I kind of protect septic systems a little bit. But you also have to be mindful, even if you're on a sewer system, because, you know, wastewater treatment plants themselves aren't necessarily designed to remove some of that stuff. And really, that wastewater ends up being treated and going back into our aquifer, too. It's not like it just disappears.
That's a really good point, because I could see where you think in the septic, it's going to be treated, it'll be fine, and not necessarily so.
That's a really great point. And one of our greatest, I would say, sort of recent success stories in the vineyard is Ayertown Great Pond had really high nitrogen levels. It was one of the first of our ponds to go into the Mass Estuaries Project. A lot of concern all throughout the community. The Ayertown wastewater plant discharges their treated effluent back into the Ayertown Great Pond watershed. And so when the wastewater treatment plant went through a major upgrade, it was like quite a while ago, was it 95 maybe? And it was before someone put down the hammer and said, you have to do this. They just said, this is just the right thing to do. It's going to cost us a ton of money. And they did so, and they went to tertiary treatment. And Ayertown Great Pond is getting cleaner. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of oyster work in there, too. There's the Great Pond Foundation is watching the eelgrass come back. All kinds of good things are happening. But a lot of that's because the wastewater treatment plant that was treating both our, you know, the sewage from downtown Ayertown decided to go through upgrades.
All right, let's talk to John, who's calling from Orleans. Good morning, John.
Good morning. There's a lot of pesticide use on Cape Cod, not only by towns, but also by private landowners. POCA, Protect Our Cape Cod Aquifer, has been screaming about that for years. Has the water been tested, and is it there, please?
I'm sorry, so the question again was, has the water been tested?
Has the water been tested for those pesticides?
For pesticides. I know that Silent Spring has been doing some work on that, and they've been looking at, I guess, you know, chemicals of emerging concern. Does anybody know the answer to that?
I don't know specifically what they have been looking for as far as pesticides go. I mean, I know they do a lot of work to that end. I'm not aware of a specific program.
Yeah, John, I would check Silent Spring's website. Maybe they have some more detailed information on exactly what chemicals they're looking at, but it's a good point. Thanks for the call.
I think it's important for Cape Cod residents to know that they can have their water tested very easily. People may not know how to do that, but going to their local health department, they can pick up all the supplies to have their water tested, whether on a well or municipal water, and choose from a menu of different options of what they want to have their water tested for. They drop it back off at the health department, and then Barnstable County Department of Health and Environment picks those up and tests them at the water lab, which is a really fabulous facility, a great resource for residents. And they can get back the information that they're looking for. And there's other state water labs around the Commonwealth that they can have. So if somebody's deeply
wondering,
concerned,
yeah.
they can use this local resource, or they can go outside to a different lab and have it tested.
Right.
And John's right. People love pesticides. Last year, I collected like 362,000 pounds of hazardous waste, 50,000 pounds of which were pesticides from homeowners. A lot of that stuff was brand new.
Wow.
You know, a lot of that stuff was old legacy waste that people moved into a home and found in their basement or their outbuilding, their garage, whatever, and they brought to a household hazardous waste collection. So when people decide that they want to find a less toxic alternative to pesticides, there's definitely options, and then they can get rid of what they have free of charge, pretty convenient, 26 times a year on Cape Cod and 4 times on the vineyard. So
Susan is giving us a call from Edgartown. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning. I'm just wondering if first of all, is the Blue Book like the bluebook.org for the website address, which you didn't give?
We will put a link up, Susan, with the show later today that you could.
Susan, it's possible that is the old link to the older edition. And I believe that the commission is trying to clean up the link so that it is just that nice and easy.
Yeah.
The easiest way that you can tell.
I had,
go ahead.
Yeah. the question I had was about water, and I have a well, and I have one of those water treatment systems, but unfortunately have found that it, in recent years, has just become unaffordable for me to maintain it through the regular commercial people. So I'm wondering if I, figured out the reverse osmosis top and took it off and serviced it myself. This is the salt that you can buy in huge bags, like at Home Depot for that. Is that the proper stuff to put in? And also, where can I get my water tested that it doesn't cost so much?
Yeah. I think, honestly, the safest thing is to have a water professional do the work for you. I don't know about adding anything from Home Depot to my water filter would be the best way to go.
On the Vineyard, you can have your water tested. The tribe does it up in Aquinnah. Yeah. Is there still a county lab?
No.
No. All right, so... That's all right. Thanks for the call, Susan. You're listening to The Point. We are discussing how to protect our drinking water. In studio with us is Calliope Shute, hazardous materials environmental specialist with the Barnstable County Hazardous Materials Program. Brian Baumgartner, I'll mess your name up every time this morning.
Okay.
Senior environmental specialist with Barnstable County Department of Health and Environment. Rick Carney, shellfish biologist and director emeritus at the Martha's Vineyard Shellfish Group. And Emma Green Beach, co-director and shellfish biologist at the Martha's Vineyard Shellfish Group. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to join our conversation or you have a question. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Can you give us some examples of cleaning products we use around the house that we might not realize are hazardous or pose a threat to groundwater? I mean, I'm thinking a lot of people are going, they buy things, say, green, and just because it says it's green doesn't necessarily mean it's good, right?
It's not simple, and it's not green. Actually, Simple Green just changed their formula recently. But I think people really have to evaluate what kind of household they want to keep. And, back in the olden days, like you were saying, Mindy, vinegar was a great ingredient to clean almost anything. That and a little elbow grease. And people want convenience. They want to spray and wipe and
put a little vinegar in a spray bottle, right?
Yeah.
Some water.
And I think people just really need to evaluate how they're going to live their life. Like, what do you want to live for? Do you want to live for a completely sanitary, disinfected home that's
not good either, though?
That's not entirely like healthy from the air quality perspective, never mind the water quality. And I think when you kind of have a benchmark of how you want to live your life, then you can start choosing products. The Blue Pages that Emma and Rick brought with them has some fabulous recipes for green cleaning. The internet is rife with lots of different sort of recipes for that kind of cleaning products. There's a lot out there, so people don't have to choose. They can find a less toxic alternative.
And it's interesting. Mm-hmm. We recently just had a laminate floor put in one of the bathrooms, and the guy who was putting the floor said, just clean this with water. You don't need to. He said, if you use anything else, you're really just going to be taking off, the shine on the top. He said, just water. And I thought, wow, just water? Okay.
Yeah. And there are other sort of what you would think of as innocuous products, like just bleach. Mm-hmm. Bleach is a great disinfectant, and it doesn't really, it's not a really direct effect on the aquifer, but dumping bleach down your septic system can kill off a lot of the good bacteria that are doing the work that we need to remove what little nitrogen a standard septic system will remove, and even an advanced system.
So is a little bit of bleach okay, but a lot of bleach is not? Is that,
Don't overdo it.
Okay.
Unless you're running a hospital.
Yeah, right. Well, or daycare. Sometimes you have to spray a little bleach water to kill all those germs, right? So we were talking about the hazardous waste collections. Four times a year on the Vineyard. We have, 26, did you say, Calliope, in Barnstable County? So what happens to that hazardous waste that you collect?
Well, I mean, I can't speak for the island, but I imagine you have to take it off by a ferry. It's the number one question people ask me at a hazardous waste collection. I had 5,000 attendees at my HHW events last year, and it's what people want to know. They want to know, where does it go? So currently the contract that the county and the towns have is with Stericycle Environmental. It's a great company. They do a wonderful job at the HHW events. They bring it back to their facility in Rhode Island, and they have different waste streams with it. Products can be incinerated if they have a high BTU value, a British thermal unit value. products can be recycled, made into a similar product. They can be upcycled, made into a new product. And lastly, and like my sad face one is, states that take hazardous waste will landfill it. So if it can't be incinerated for energy, recycled or upcycled, it's landfilled in a state that accepts that kind of waste stream. Massachusetts doesn't. Mm-hmm. There are some companies that are looking at innovative ways to manage hazardous waste, to recycle it. Some places have swap shops. Mm-hmm. A lot of the stuff that comes in is brand new. Yeah. And so, looking at different ways to manage that waste stream is something that the industry is looking at. So when I go to the the national conference of all the people like me, and they're looking at how to manage these waste streams that have less impact on groundwater, whether you're in Massachusetts or you're in a state that accepts hazardous waste for landfilling purposes.
Mm. Well, what about Vin? You just pack it up and send it off on the ferry?
Everything leaves the island.
On the ferry.
Yes. And Don Hatch leads the refuse district. And so they would know more about exactly where it goes.
So I'm just thinking about paint because, a lot of people have old paint cans and sometimes they're still half full. Sometimes they're dry. And people say, well, if they're dry, you can throw them in the trash. Should you be doing that or should you be bringing them to the hazardous waste collection?
Well, not all paint is hazardous. These days, luckily, people are buying more acrylic and latex, also known as water-based paints. The Cape has eight. Now seven. No, I guess there's eight now because the first one's May 4th. Latex paint take back days. People can go, if they're interested, they have old legacy paint in their homes. It's water-based paint. They can go to townofbourne.com/paint and find out when all of the water-based paint take back days are for the Cape. Like I said, there's eight. They're from Wellfleet through Bourne. And you don't have to be a resident of the town to attend. But if paint is hazardous, like marine paint, like bottom paint for boats, or auto paints, aerosols, oil-based paints, those are hazardous, and those should come to an HHW event.
Yeah. And one thing I just want to add to what you said previously about some of that hazmat ending up in a landfill is that, we talk a lot about where is away. And even though we're bringing it to a hazardous waste collection and we feel good, you have to understand that some of that does end up in a place where we really don't want it to go. So I think, the key is let's put Calliope out of business, essentially. let's use
in
less.
In 5 years, Brian.
Right. let's use less. Let's use alternatives that we don't need to, put in a landfill and have end up in somebody else's groundwater.
Right.
I'm happy to hear that so many people ask you where it goes. I think that's a great indication that people are – but those are the people who are bringing their hazardous materials to the correct place.
Well, they're directed there oftentimes by a health official, like the town of Yarmouth, the town of Barnstable. They have hazardous waste inspectors that are part of their health divisions. And those people work with small businesses to get rid of hazardous waste. They work with residents that are moving. I get residents referred to me by realtors, people that are moving to a different state, or people that are, unfortunately, there was a death in the family. That happens a lot on the Cape. We have, so those people move into the home and find all this legacy waste. They didn't purchase it. They don't know what it is. Sometimes it's in a secondary container with no labeling, so it comes to me, and it's, in a clear glass bottle. It's, I have
what
no
is
idea
that?
What it is.
Yeah.
So, there's all these different, and people, you're right, Brian, people love to think that by coming to an HHW event, they're doing the right thing. And they are, but less toxic alternatives are always the first point of entry into the market.
Right. We talked about some of the household products, and the Blue Pages has a chapter devoted to landscapes for healthy watersheds. What are we doing in our yards to benefit the watershed?
There's more and more of a movement of embracing what we kind of call a vineyard yard, a vineyard lawn, and trying to use fewer pesticides and fertilizers and planting more native plants and drought-resistant grasses. And but it's really a cultural change. Mm-hmm. It's really a change. And actually, a really enthusiastic young landscaper appeared in my office last week. It was really serendipitous because I had these Blue Pages in my hands. And she was like, I want to figure out how to get people to want to plant native plants. Like, why are we obsessed with hydrangeas? Why does everyone want to have such an emerald green lawn? Mm-hmm. So it's really this cultural change that we're trying to to make.
Well, yeah, and also with the native plants, that also benefits our pollinators.
Yes.
Right? Calliope, you know a little bit about that.
I do, but I wanted to, like Rick mentioned at the break about his 12-step program with lawns, and I think
it's on page 40.
Rick, tell us about that.
Yeah, it's chapter 9 in the Blue Pages. It was interesting because as I said, the Blue Pages was put together by committee, and we would have the committee meetings on Friday afternoons. So it was kind of, they were loose, to say the least. But I think we all were very creative. And the one woman, like I said, we broke this into different committees, took a chapter. And one woman went on and on about how, I don't understand, these people seem to be addicted to these green lawns. And we thought, that's kind of a cool way to deal with this. So we came up with the 12-step program for lawn addiction.
Right.
And and when you think about it, it really is. There's almost like...
Yeah.
And I think it's also peer pressure. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to change the general idea that a green lawn is such a great thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In August, it's okay to be brown. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. And right. I mean, if you think about biodiversity,
yeah.
If you just leave your dandelions and you leave your moss, I mean, sometimes get close to your grass and look at all the different things that are growing there if you don't have a totally green lawn. And it's an entire ecosystem.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we make a monoculture, it just destroys that.
And when you have maybe a slightly smaller lawn, maybe there's a shade tree or two, they're casting a little bit of shade across your lawn, then it's going to be a little less brown in August. Mm-hmm. So the more that you can kind of embrace the natural systems, the easier then your life gets, less time you can spend mowing.
Yeah.
And you know, especially in the vineyard, we do this. We're on the water. We look across the pond and kind of point out the green lawns and kind of watching how they slope right towards our estuaries.
Yeah.
And so there are new fertilizer regs. Actually, they're about 5 years old now. There are fertilizer regulations on the vineyard where all the landscapers have to go through a certification process. And it gets at applying limited amounts of fertilizer in certain seasons, not mm-hmm. when the plants aren't growing, when they don't need it. Because all that extra nitrogen right on the surface there does make its way right into our ponds.
Yeah.
And being shellfish biologists, this is what we think about and see on a daily basis, is how that nitrogen is enriching the ponds and causing those macroalgae blooms, those big green seaweeds and all kinds of scuzzy stuff that eventually leads to depleted oxygen and sunlight penetration and sick eelgrass beds and fewer scallops and all the delicious
and
things.
And nobody likes to sit on that water.
No.
Yeah.
But one of the problems with with the regulation is that it basically regulates the commercial industry.
Mm-hmm.
And individual homeowners can still put whatever they want on the lawn.
Right.
And so, again, that's what the idea of the Blue Pages is, that we reach out and educate everyone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I like to tie everything back to wastewater because I'm a wastewater guy. So in wastewater, we really have a fantastic fertilizer.
Yeah.
And a lot of people just want to get rid of this stuff. So one of the great things that I get to do at the test center is really come up with ideas of what we should be doing with this stuff. So one of the sort of infancy ideas I've been working with is trying to see what types of plants will grow well in highly treated wastewater. Mm. And I'm calling them Waste No Water Gardens. That's not copyrighted or trademarked or anything. Anybody can use it.
Yeah.
So that's another thing we could explore is using our gray water or maybe treating our you know, full wastewater stream and reusing it to get, you know, maybe some of that green
water. I always wondered
why
we don't use more gray. Like in Florida, you see signs all the time outside when they're, you know, mm-hmm. for the gardens thing, gray water, you know, don't drink it. But the plants like it, right?
Right. Yeah they do. There's a lot of nutrients in it.
So the Martha Vineyard Shellfish Group is primarily a shellfish hatchery. So my co-director right now is manning the hatchery. We have baby quahogs. But one of the crazy projects that we've gotten involved in, you know, as Rick did the Blue Pages years ago, is I led a project funded by the EPA where we actually looked at the possibility of harvesting the invasive reed Phragmites
mm-hmm.
From the pond edges to remove nitrogen from the water. Because right. in other places, they actually use Phragmites in constructed wetlands
yep.
exactly for that job.
Wow.
It's
yep.
just so
yeah.
good at it.
Yeah, we have a couple of those,
so,
actually. A couple of test cells at the test center set up growing Phragmites.
With Phragmites?
Yep,
yeah.
yep.
The Barnstable County Water Utilities Association is having a water fair in June at Mass Maritime. Calliope, tell us a little bit about the fair.
Well, it's primarily for utility operators. Brian's going to be a speaker. I'm happy that he said that he would be a speaker. And what we're focusing on is resiliency with water utilities. So it's everyone from boots on the ground folks to administrators of water utilities from across the state that will come to the Maritime Academy to hear about, water utilities and resilience. Mm-hmm.
We have about a minute left. Any closing thoughts?
Love your dandelions and don't hate the rain.
Yes, right. Love your dandelions because right now that's what the bees are feasting on.
It's
right?
Their first big crop that they can pull nectar and pollen from. So
wait,
it's
don't do it. Don't pull them yet. Yeah. We'll have a link to the Island Blue Pages and more information about hazardous waste collections on our website, capeandislands.org. Thank you all for being here and for the work that you do. It's very important.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for the outreach.
You bet. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.